You're listening to the Almost 30 podcast, hosted by Krista Williams and Lindsay Simsek. Almost 30 started as a conversation about the transition from our 20s to our 30s. But then we realized life is full of transitions. So we expanded our mission.
We are an intuition-led, wellness-focused lifestyle podcast that promises to deliver authentic conversations, diverse points of view, and insights rooted in optimism, growth, and intention. The Almost 30 Nation community is a group of purposeful dreamers who are smart, passionate, and always seeking the full potential in every aspect of their lives.
At Almost 30, we're making magic together. We dream it,
and then we do it.
Thanks so much for tuning into the Almost 30 podcast.
Here we go.
Hello and welcome to Almost 30. We're so glad you're here.
Hey everyone, it's Lindsay and Krista. And thank you so much for being here. It's been a wild ride the last 3.5 years, and we're so grateful to continue to serve you and just have really honest conversations.
As always, I'm Krista.
Oh yeah, I said
that. Did you?
I was like, it's Lindsay and Krista.
Oh my god. Guys, I'm an old dog here. we're again excited. We've been having a lot of really deep conversations about what is happening in the world today and trying to do our best to, you know, shine light on the important messages within the movement that is happening. It is so important that we work as hard as we can on anti-racism in our community, in our family, in our Facebook group, even in our, with our listeners. And that is really what we've been focusing on for the past couple of weeks and even the past years.
Yeah. Yeah. We started this work in 2018, which candidly is late period.
Yeah,
you know
sure.
what I mean? So, but since then it's been very much a part of who we are as Almost 30. Yeah, the Facebook group, if you're not a part of it, I highly recommend joining the group. We have incredible moderators in the group that are just creating and setting the space for honest conversations, thoughtful, supportive conversations, conversations that have really taught me so much, that continue to teach our community and just help them grow. This is what it's about, no matter where you are in your journey, whether you're just waking up to the fact that racism has been systemic like for 400 plus years,
yeah.
Like it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, meeting yourself where you are and committing to the work.
Can't turn away.
Yeah, you can't turn away. We're here to learn and grow together.
Yeah, it's been interesting, like with all of the people that I connect with regularly, to see them waking up now. And it reminds me so much, and what I've been really grappling with within what we do, like in the wellness space and the spirituality space, is like a lot of the information within the anti-racism movement, and when we talk about, you know, systematic racism and white supremacy, a lot of that goes against a lot of spiritual teachings that are very popular today, which is, you know, your thoughts create your reality, that you chose, you know, as an example, that your soul chose to be incarnated in this situation to experience these things. And it's all a choice, you know, it's all destiny or it's all a choice. So it's been so interesting to like unpack that and
yeah.
really work with that information, like as you open your eyes to like the reality of the world. And I was like talking about it for so long with my therapist, like about that and how I can, it's like unlearn. It's like be aware, but unlearn. So I've just been thinking about that so much lately about, you know, the spirituality conversation of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to that point, I was talking to a friend and we were talking about where we're getting our information. So whether it's spirituality or whether it's from the news, reading articles, blogs, even on Instagram. And it was interesting what she said. She's like, I've actually been taking in some information, and not to necessarily believe it, but from like the far right and the far left and like in the middle, because we don't know necessarily if everything we're receiving and hearing is true. That's like an extreme, you know, word, true, but to know what exists, like the far right, if we're watching Fox News or what have you, to know that that exists. And so like in my mind, it was just interesting because I don't actually really watch the news a lot. I have been more as of late, but to actually know that that those opinions, those groups, like those movements are happening on the way other side as well, also helps me to just kind of stand a bit more grounded and firm in what I believe and in my resolve. So it was just really interesting because I never thought to kind of diversify the way in which I'm taking in information.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything is the echo chamber, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And I think that's been interesting too. Like we were talking about with Jessica Lignadu, the astrologer, during the live we did yesterday about the amplified melanated voices and the muted movement.
Yes.
And how that really shifted the algorithm. And that was really the point of it, to shift the algorithm to not center whiteness always and to just have other people have a chance to like be seen. And so it's been really powerful to see more of our community follow Black women, yes. more of our community follow women of color. But yeah, as far as the information goes, it's like being thoughtful about consuming information, but then also too, like finding time to be quiet, to find what's true for you. And I think that's sometimes the part that's missing, even for me, you know, the time to be quiet, to just know what's true for me and what's true for my heart. So for any of the information, it's like disseminating it, breaking it down, digesting it, and then like sinking in and leaning into what my truth.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys relate out there, but just with social media in general, you know, I've found it to be such a great resource as of late and such a great way to learn, grow, support Black women, Black men, people of color in general. And also, you know, to your point, I just have this strong pull to take a moment. And there is like a kind of a conflict there. So if I'm not keeping up with what's happening, am I going to miss something and then miss the point? You know, I have a little bit of anxiety around that, which it pales in comparison to what's going on. But I'm just like kind of having those conversations with myself where I don't want to show up without having integrated what I just learned, right? Like just really have that time for integration, whether it's, you know, we're taking courses, we're reading books, we're watching movies, we're listening to podcasts. And I'm the type of person, and a lot of us are, where it's just like, I kind of need that moment, but I also feel this like very intense energy of like, you need to stay connected online.
Yeah, for sure.
Connected on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm sure so many people feel that way. And it's been crazy to see like with our friends and people in our space again, like how many they keep coming to me to ask about certain things, I think, because they feel comfortable with another white woman asking about things. But it's really more about like, how do they respond to people of their community being like, why aren't you speaking to this? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you doing all these things? And so much of that for me personally doesn't feel like the right type of action. It's like, yo, always worry about your side of the street. Yeah. You know what I mean? Everyone is like, yes, we should call out people we care about for sure. Like call them to change, call them to awareness, call them in, you know, but I don't feel like the way that people are calling out people and telling them what to say and do is the move. Mm-hmm. And it's even like, I got even a message. What was the other day? My community is like angels. You know, I really don't get anything that combative or that directive or that judgmental ever. I think because I'm so like, dude, don't even come at me. But I got something that was like, I hope you've grown out of something. It was like something I watch on TV. It was like, I hope you've grown out of this show on TV. And they said, I hope you've grown out of.
Are you my mom?
Honestly, I was like, yo, please come again. I'm literally 32 years old. I was beyond the wording of, I hope you've grown out of. I'm like, please, please do not come at me and say, I hope you've grown out of anything. That is so fucking,
that is rude.
It's just so entitled. Like, what the fuck do you mean?
And like, so unconscious.
Unconscious. Anyways, the point of that was like, just always do your own work. You know what I mean? Like, just truly worry about your own shit and don't DM me that shit.
Jess Lignadu in the live that you did with her the other day. And by the way, you can watch that on our IGTV. But it was interesting to hear her talk about cancel culture being over. And I just found it so fascinating because, yeah, I agree. Like, there has to be a switch so that what we are doing and saying isn't so divisive. It is that invitation in. It is like, let's stumble through that conversation. Like, let us support one another as we grow. And so much of that comes from, like you said, like making sure that you are doing the work and not judging yourself for it. Because most likely if you're judging other people, you're judging yourself. So it's like, it's really fine tuning that. And it just, to the point of like the wellness industry and self-development, you know, I don't think, you know, I'm not saying like anti-racism work is another piece of my like self-care, self-development, et cetera. But if we've adhered to this world where going in, leaning in, doing the work has been a part of like what we do, I'm just like, can we walk that talk? Like in everything we do, like how we do one thing is how we're going to do everything, just because this seems to be more confronting. And I'm speaking to people who are not Black, who are not POC, like just because it feels more confronting doesn't mean like you don't have everything you need to lean in and do this work, you know, to really be with this. So, you know, I know we're all on different points in the spectrum within this work, but just trusting yourselves to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess with that point, it's like, do people have, I think they have the information, but I don't know if people maybe don't have the support system.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is
definitely being, don't have the information.
Yeah.
I'm just saying like they have what they need in terms of like, if they've shown up for themselves before and done
yeah,
work to,
that's a good one.
To grow and, mm-hmm. and step into kind of that next level of themselves, like
you
that,
could do this
is part of your evolution,
yeah,
is to
sure.
do this work, right?
For sure.
But yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah, it was even interesting with Jessica, you know, talking about cancel culture, and I'll say it here. It's just like, I feel like I don't feel anything about cancel culture because I've actually spoke, I think I spoke about it a year ago that I kind of was like, I wasn't down with it. But now I just feel like I have no, I don't have the right to say anything about it because it's not me that's been a victim of the people that are being canceled. So it's like, you know, the victims of the people that are being canceled are the ones that have the right to speak their mind or say whatever they want. And as a white woman, it's like, who am I to say that, you know, this group of underserved, underseen people can't be finally using their voice to like make change? So I'm kind of just like, watch. I kind of just like, okay, respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't, it's not my place.
And her point was like, we can cancel like systems and
yes.
institutions, you know, when we cancel individuals, it just feels different.
Counterproductive,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
yeah. Thanks for coming to our TED Talk.
And by the way, our intros are now on YouTube. We use
yes.
video now, so just wanted to
come through face.
Direct you to YouTube.
Come through and see my, dude, maybe one day I'll fucking wear makeup, but
nah.
Also,
nah.
Just know, you know, it's been kind of, it's been hard to show up on the pod, have the intros and be funny and fun during this time. So just
yeah.
know that we're being, you know, we just want to be mindful and we don't want to be tone deaf and we want
to
be.
And it doesn't feel authentic to us to like
yeah.
show up and be fucking silly
good
gooses.
Pods, yeah.
You know,
we're just always going to be ourselves and we
yeah.
really appreciate, you know, you guys being here for this.
Mm-hmm. And today's conversation with Trudy LeBron is a really important one. I love Trudy. I actually did not know the work in which she's doing, specifically coaching coaches on diversity and inclusivity, is one that I hadn't really heard
I mean,
of before.
How fucking important is that?
So important.
Dude, it's so important.
Yeah, I loved her. And one of the things that stood out to me was the way in which she emphasizes making your impact as a coach, and this really applies, by the way, to anyone, we're making your impact dynamic. So it's like not focusing necessarily on the numbers, like making this salary and reaching this many people. It's like really thinking about your impact in the world as super dynamic, like, you know, whether it's mentorship or you are, you know, donating to certain causes on a regular basis, but, you know, really looking at success in a different way. And I loved that.
Yeah. And especially within the coaching community, I think from our perspective, and maybe we've just had, access to more white women in the coaching space or white men. And so it is a space that, like, when we are doing or participating in the processes that are presented by coaches, whether it's like a wealth mindset or whether it's a growth mindset or whether it's like figuring out how to run your business or set up your business, there's so many parts of that that touch on diversity, equity, and inclusion that it's like, how has this potentially been missed for so long? So I'm really thankful, you know, that Trudy's on today to talk us through the importance of this in the coaching space and then just in general. So we talk through, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion and anti-racism, what the differences are. We also talk about spiritual bypassing, what spiritual bypassing is when it's seen. We talk about microaggressions that she's experienced in her time as she's come up to where she is today. And we also talk about, you know, the situation recently that happened with Marie Forleo, where she called out or in, you know, I'm not sure, Marie Forleo on the way that she showed up in her community on Facebook. So what had happened was Marie was deleting comments and silencing people. And Trudy, you know, called that out to Marie to make her aware of the damage that was done through that process.
Yeah. So this conversation, I highly suggest, you know, being in a place where you can take it in, take notes. I just love Trudy so much. TrudyLebron.com. If you would like to work with Trudy, highly recommend. And I just thought it was really interesting and truth-telling where she found that in her work, like a lot of the coaches she was coaching and started to coach hadn't done the work themselves. And we see that a lot, you know, in what we do. I mean, we see coaches out there, life coaches out there who are 19. So, you know, it's like, do the work yourself and you will experience such a fruitful business and purpose, you know? So TrudyLebron.com, TrudyLebron.com.
Yeah, we love you guys. We will see you on the next side.
Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Therapy, y'all. I don't know. I don't know what I did before therapy, to be completely honest with you. I think I was kind of a mess, but, you know, found it when I was meant to. But I have been going to therapy for about 6 years now, which is so crazy. So crazy, but it has changed my life, and I will continue to invest in therapy for as long as I can. I feel like it has totally, totally made my relationships better, made my career better. I am a better mom. I am a better wife. I am a better friend. I am a better daughter and sister. Y'all, it's just the gift that keeps on giving. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do, this is it. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. If you get matched and you're like, eh, not quite a fit, they make it easy and it's free to change. But I've had a lot of friends try BetterHelp and love it. So I really, really encourage you to start therapy. It's been the best decision I've ever made for myself. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/almost30 today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/almost30.
Okay, I need to introduce you to a revolutionary new app, Superhuman. I have been doing these Superhuman activations every single morning for the last 3 weeks. Let me just tell you, I kind of fell off of my game after I had the baby. Most of my time and energy was going to him. Still is, but I have been able to carve out time in the morning before I get into the swing with him. And I've been doing these activations. I do a lot of the shorter ones because I don't have a ton of time. But let me just say, this is new. Like, this is a new type of audio that are super energizing and really specifically designed to transform you into your future self. So I know a lot of us want to manifest things. I know a lot of us are thinking about planning for the future, but a lot of us feel stuck. And so I've just felt like this has unstuck me in just the most beautiful way. So I've been doing a lot of their pep talks. I've been doing some of their writing activations. This morning I did the 3 morning questions. It was a 7-minute, really vibey writing activation that I love. So I had my journal out. Yesterday I did a pep talk about tackling procrastination. There's a part of me that procrastinates quite a bit. So I love this. I love this. There's going to be an activation for you for this moment, for this day. It's incredibly supportive. So we actually interviewed Mimi Bouchard, the founder, not too long ago. Check out that interview. And we have a sample of one of the activations on our feed. So you can check that out as well. It's way easier to implement into your routine and far more effective than any other audio app out there. I've just noticed that I'm doing it much more consistently. So please don't miss out on this crazy deal. They rarely do discounts. On top of the 14-day free trial, get over 60% off your subscription for a limited time only at activation.com/almost30. Literally, there is no risk. If you change your mind and forget to cancel after the trial, you're covered by their money back guarantee. The offer is only available through their website, not on the app store. So that's activations.com/almost30 for 60% off. It expires soon.
Before we do this, get started with a little bit of background, because I love your story. I think it's so profound and I think it's so beautiful, and it humanizes someone that feels so smart to me. So I would love to hear, you know, a little bit about what brought you to the work that you do today.
Yeah, I thought that my work was going to be, I thought I was going to be like a consultant for schools. Well, first I thought I was going to be a hip hop artist, but that was like another life. That was like when I was a teenager. But what I really thought my business was going to be when I set out to start, you know, my entrepreneurial journey, I thought I was going to be designing curriculum and doing training for teachers and social workers who were working with students in urban schools who were like considered high risk youth. So Black and brown youth, teen moms, students who were like over age, under credit, like that kind of population, which is the population of students that I had worked with when I was doing youth development. And that was like my first area of expertise was youth, adolescent and young adult development. So I set out to, you know, start doing that because I was a teen mom. And like I had experience after experience after experience interacting with different systems like school systems and social work and Department of Social Services and those kinds of systems. And then also just general life where I was really treated in ways that were just, you would never treat a human being, like, you know, like just strange. I remember strangers walking up to me and telling me, you know, like me pregnant or like with a child and also pregnant or with pushing 2 children in a double stroller and visibly like a kid, right? Like 16, 17 years old. I had both of my sons by the time I was 16. And, you know, people saying like, oh, you're going to be a burden on society, like strangers.
Whoa.
Strangers would walk up to me and ask me if they had the same father. Strangers would just like, just, you know, the stares, the eye rolls, the like, just all kinds of assumptions. The fact that like I disappeared from a school system. Like I left pregnant when I was in 9th grade and there wasn't any follow up. It was just kind of like, oh, she's pregnant. That's it. And just, it was just allowed to happen. So, you know, I noted it was a noticeable difference. And I became obsessed. I was also like super stubborn. So all of the things that people told me about how like your life is going to be over and it's going to be so hard and you're going to be broke forever and like your kids are going to be like all these, you know, horrible things and stupid, all of the stereotypes. I was like, absolutely not. Like watch, you know, watch me. At the time, like it took me a long time to realize that doing things because like to prove other people wrong, that the energy that it takes to do things when you're coming from that place is just so draining. Like it, people hear it and they're like, oh, like, well, good for you. Like you proved them wrong. It's like, I shouldn't have had to, you know, like we shouldn't have had to, people shouldn't have to do things because they're proving other people wrong, because it just shifts the way that you're able to approach your life. And it adds this level of stresses and anxiety that you just don't have if you're just like living your life regularly, like not in spite of anything else, but just that you're just living, right? So anyway, finished high school, went to college.
How did you go to college?
So I actually kind of like homeschooled myself through high school. And I got a GED. Actually, I got a GED a year early, like earlier than I would have graduated high school. And I was a college freshman when the rest of my graduating class were starting their senior year in high school. So I just like found a different way. I was always looking for a different way to be successful. Like, you know, I knew what I wanted and I was like, there got to be another way to get there. Like this path isn't going to work for me. So like, I have to find another way. And that has really become the central theme in like my whole life. Anyway, so I passed the test, started at community college, then, you know, like went into, you know, regular state university. And I studied, like I got really obsessed with understanding how some people achieve certain life outcomes in the face of all of the statistic disadvantages that they might be facing. And so I got really, that became like what I studied first, like as a minor social, like a social science minor, but then in grad school as a, you know, master's in psychology, and then in my PhD program in social psychology, like really trying to understand what makes the difference for people to be successful. And then how does that become institutionalized? So how do businesses and like systems, right? Nonprofits, businesses, school systems create the conditions and the environments that either help people be successful or not, which is why now I work with people in their businesses. Like I do this applied diversity, equity, and inclusion work because I'm really interested in helping people institutionalize practices that create equity. It's not just about like, how are we better people, but how do we create that so that it can be scaled and replicated? Because it's in the systems where people become like marginalized, like where entire communities become marginalized, right? It's not just because like people don't like each other. It's because we've built systems that systemically oppress people. And for the work that I do now, which is focused on helping businesses, particularly businesses in the personal development industry, create spaces that are more equitable, that are more inclusive, it ties directly into this because the narratives that we get about what our life is supposed to be are 100% based on patriarchal, capitalistic, white supremacist idea of what a life should look like. Like that is what the country was built on. And I know that sounds really uncomfortable, but if we think about it, like that is what, that's what we have. Like the systems that, the way that we teach people to build business, the marketing strategies that we teach people to use, the decision-making that we have, like the way we teach children in school, like that everything is about achievement and it's not about, you don't come to school to play or socialize, you come to like learn and to achieve, right? Like all of these things are about winning and power and dominance. And that is what marginalizes people because it puts people in this like constant battle against each other. And all the time, because of anti-Blackness, all of the time, what it's going to do is like push Black and Brown folks to the margins continually. And we need to be intentionally disrupting that pattern if we're ever going to like have something different.
When did you realize that you wanted, you know, the work in this space happen? Like, I know, so you grew up as someone that was like wanting to prove everyone wrong, being a 16-year-old mom. But what about race was such a pull to you?
Yeah. So for me, race was always a central part of my identity because I'm a biracial Latina, right? And so I'm a light-skinned biracial woman. My father is Afro-Latino. He's, if you just looked at him, he's a Black man, right? So I grew up, that's what I tell people, when you're white, you just get to be white. Like you don't even have to think about it. Most white people, if you ask them when was the first time they thought about that, they realized they were white, usually they'll say like, I mean, I've had that conversation with people who have been like, I've never even thought about that question, right? But usually they'll say, you know, 12, you know, somewhere in school when they like made their first non-white friend, you know, like where it starts to become a realization. But when you're not white, you always know that you're not white. So I can't remember a time when I didn't know that I wasn't all the way white because people were constantly asking me, what are you? Where are you from? Is that your dad? How could he be your dad? Oh, you speak Spanish? Like, show me. Like, these kinds of, like, you know, and these messages are meant to, maybe they're not meant to, but what they do is they tell people that they're not part of the in-group, like the dominant group. So race has always been something that I have always been super mindful of and really aware of. And having biracial identity is something that, you know, they're just unique, especially when you are light skin. You know, there's just like a lot of negotiating of your own identity so that, because you don't feel like you fit in places sometimes. So there's just like a lot of reconciling that has to happen. But then for me, going into a space where professionally, where I started to understand more about like what makes some people achieve and what other people don't, or like what privileges some people and disadvantages other people, the ways that that cuts, like that breaks down across race, it's heartbreaking. Like, it is just so clear, like, and from a data place, it's when you grow up in it, you know it. Like, I grew up in an urban environment. Like, it's something that I saw all the time, how like my black and brown friends, darker skin friends were treated differently than the white people. Like, that was something that was always clear, right? How my father would be pulled over, like those kinds of things, right? But to see it on paper, like in data, it like brings it to a different level. And so like it became a natural part of the work that I was doing to talk about it. I realized that nothing will change. Like, no, we can do all of the, when I started doing this work, for some reason, it got like diversity work got lumped into anti-bullying work when like anti-bullying was like a big thing. And so those two things got really muddled together, like from a professional perspective. And what I realized was that the anti-bullying curriculum that we would sometimes come into schools and do just didn't work in Black communities. Like, when we went into the school system that I grew up in and did the anti-bullying curriculum, it just didn't work. Like, it worked perfectly in like the white suburb down the street, you know? And I just started realizing these things aren't built for my community. Like, this stuff wasn't built for us. And I was like, we have to start building things to intentionally include people in order for them to work.
Yeah, there's so much there. I would love to shift into the coaching work and working with coaches, and so many people who are wanting to become coaches but are unwilling to do the work to unpack kind of their side of the street.
Yeah.
Which seems like obvious that it's very counterintuitive. But what did you find in first working with coaches, and why that is? Like, kind of the desire to become a coach.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that like when I came into the coaching industry, maybe like now 2016, when I like say, I'm going to hire my coach, I was at a point in my business where it couldn't grow unless I got some help, but I really couldn't afford to get help. You know what I mean? Like that kind of chicken and egg moment that so many of us understand. So I jumped in and like joined a mastermind, but I had been doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work in schools and nonprofits for years by this point, right? So this is not like new work for me. Like, I've been around for a while. So I get into the coaching industry and I'm like, whoa, this place is white. Like, this is like super white, right? Like, yes. And like, it's super white in like the people. There were no other non-white people. I am very light skinned, and I was the brownest person like in the cohort of people that I was, you know, in a mastermind with. Like, I just you know, people would say things that were not appropriate. Like, for example, you know, me sharing that I'm a teen mom, that's not something that I always disclose when I show up. Well, now more because people know me, but at the beginning, it's not something that I would like open up a conversation with. But you know how people will get together and moms will be like, oh, you have kids? I'm like, yeah, I have kids. And I'm like, oh, my kids are like 18. And I get these looks right away that people are like looking at me, trying to figure out how old I am, doing math in their head. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like this really uncomfortable thing. And then inevitably it'd be like, well, how old are you? Like, how old were you when you had your kids? Like, oh, like, what did your parents say? Like, all of these like super personal questions that you really shouldn't ask for people sure. that you don't know. But people feel entitled because they don't know that story. But that is, I tell you, like, I have never had that experience if I go somewhere and it's the room full of other Black and Brown moms. Because it's not, because they get it. Like, culturally, even if they weren't teen parents, like, they understand that that's just not, it, that that's something that happens sometimes and it's not the end of the world. And you know what I mean? But like, for white people, like, it's just a whole different, there's just a whole different narrative wrapped around it. And so, you know, just things. And then all of the, you know, spiritual bypassy things and different kinds of coaching advice and double your rates and all, yes. you know, all these things.
That's
and,
my
you
favorite
know,
one.
Yeah, that's mine too. And like, super out of touch advice that when you're talking to people who are coming from a different place, whose entry point into business is about more than just making money, that advice doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for me to double my rates if the people that I want to help can't afford it.
100%.
You know what I mean?
And like, you have no experience. It's always like, dude, what?
Well, that's you know right. What I mean? And you have right. And on top of that, you have no experience. What? Exactly. I remember hearing, like, whenever I hear people say, oh, just like be a coach. You don't need to. I want to flip a table.
Honey, you want, I mean, you probably more, but mine's the same. It's like when people want to exit their life or their corporate job, I feel like that's like the track that they take. Instead of like mastering the lane that they're in, they use it as an exit point to create something new.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. And then people wonder why they can't get clients. It's like, well,
100%.
You might need some more experience. You need to bring some like expertise to the table here, right? So anyway, all of these things were happening, and I'm watching. And people using language that was just inappropriate and culturally appropriative and all of these things. And I was like, oh, these people don't know. Like, this industry hasn't had the awakening in the ways that like education has been dealing with this for years. Tech, even though they're not doing a great job, they've had like diversity initiatives, like other sectors have know that this is something that they need to do. But the coaching industry, and I think it's partly because the coaching industry is a bunch of entrepreneurs, you know, like for the most part. And there's no like HR department saying like, hey, you gotta like, you know, go to the diversity training. So people aren't paying attention to it. And then the other part is that coaching and paying for coaching, it's countercultural for people of color, for Black and Brown folks. Like if my father knew what I invested in my first coach, he probably would like just jack me up, because like the idea that you would pay for personal development is just not something that is a sound financial decision. You know what I mean? Yes. But like, that's something that's super regular for lots of white folks. And now I am generalizing, but I am talking like statistically speaking, like that it is just a different. There's a different orientation to the idea of like paying for.
Well,
that
you have to have a certain level of income to be able to have an expense such as coaching. It's like cover your food, cover your bills, cover your necessities, and then the ability to cover the next level. And then the ability to think critically about the way in which you're showing up in your life is like a third or fourth level of being able to spend, which is like mostly afforded to white people who've been, who've had the privilege to not maybe pay for school or X, Y, and Z, so many things.
But even, you know, I'm thinking like even my father's family who were like, you know, my father is, you know, super stable income, like, you know, definitely had, probably has enough, you know, disposable, flexible income to be paying for something like coaching, but he would never do that because it's just like, that's not what you do with your money. You know, like you need to be smarter. Like that's not a valuable thing. Like the thought of it is very self-indulgent.
You know? Totally. Totally. There's something you said that I want to dig into a little bit more, which is spiritual bypassing. And I want to talk a little bit more about how that shows up in the coaching world and even just like the wellness world in general. So can you talk about what that is and some examples of how that shows up?
Yeah. So spiritual bypassing is the ideas that perpetuate a lot of spiritual communities that dismiss real life kind of situations and that kind of like allow people to just like pass by and account for like just real horrific things and to absolve themselves of responsibility is probably the best way to put it. So for example, you know, this idea that many people hold that your soul chooses, you know, your soul chooses the life that it's going to have, and that your soul knows before all of these things happen, like all of the things that are going to happen to you, and that you basically are consenting to the life that you have because your soul contract, like because you like have, you have chosen this, right? And so sometimes people who I'm starting to see this change, and people like hold space for multiple realities. But for a lot of people, what they'll say is like, oh, you know, I can't make you feel anything, or I can't cause you harm, or like, you know, you knew that you were going to be born as a Black woman. And so like everything that's happened to you, like you, it's something that your soul, it's a journey that your soul is on, and there's something from it that you have to learn. Right. And that's a bunch of crap. Like that's, you know, like that's just so, and I don't like to, you know, as a, I try to be as scientific as possible. And like, I don't like to get into debates about spirituality, because like, I can't, it's something I can't prove and you can't either. Like, and I get the difference between like belief and how important that is, and, you know, and actual like facts and what is, and what's useful in a moment. And so what I have told people is like, cool, you can believe that. Like you can, you have every right to believe that soul contracts are real and that all of those things are true, right? And that doesn't mean that what somebody is experiencing in this very physical body isn't harm, like isn't hurtful. Like you have to come to the space where like, yes, it's both. And how like saying to someone that you chose that experience because there was something that you needed to, your soul needed to learn from it, is dismissed. Like it's entirely dismissive. And it only benefits the person who is like saying it. Like it does no, it's actually a real lazy coaching strategy, because you're not actually helping the person. Yeah. You're not acknowledging where they are. Like that is not a helpful, it's gaslighting.
Yeah. I am juggling quite a bit lately. I have a new baby, 6 months in, and we are finishing our book and running a business and a marriage and a house. And it's just a lot, but everything is all good and just my dream, but it's a lot. But I have found that if my health routine is on point, then everything runs smoothly. And one huge piece of that routine is my supplementation. And Symbiotica has just always been a constant in my routine. If you haven't heard of Symbiotica, they're a health and wellness company that does everything with intention. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Like I know them. Sherveen has been on the podcast many times. I just have seen how passionate, how incredibly intelligent, how dedicated he is to creating products that are clean, plant-based, without toxic or harmful chemicals, which we need more of that in the world. So let me just run you through what I'm taking. I take the vitamin D3 K2. It's the liposomal form. I just squirt 12 little pumps in my mouth every single morning. I also take their B12. I'm also obsessed with the liposomal vitamin C. I have these little packets. Whether it's winter or whatever season, it's obviously great for immunity, but it also is amazing because it has biotin, one of nature's most beautifying ingredients. So I've seen an improvement in my skin, hair, and nail growth as well. I do have mom brain, but I'm doing my best to just support my brain health in any way. So for brain health, focus, and memory, I really love taking their liposomal magnesium L-threonate. It's an innovative form of magnesium that is able to cross the blood-brain barrier. It supports brain health, mood, immune system function, and overall well-being. It's incredible and tastes amazing. It's like this yummy vanilla cream flavor. That's the thing with Symbiotica products. They taste unbelievable. So it really makes taking all of these supplements so easy, so yummy, and I actually look forward to it. So if you want to give Symbiotica a try, there is no better time. Right now is the time. Symbiotica.com, Cymbiotika. Use our code ALMOST30, 20% off site-wide. So major. And then when you bundle and subscribe, which I highly recommend because you never want to run out of anything, you're going to get an extra discount. So just do it up. Symbiotica.com and use the code ALMOST30 for 20% off site-wide.
And I think the missing piece there is like, okay, so
the soul chooses the body, but like the body on earth, you know what I'm saying? So it's in this reality. So like to be up here and kind of bypass everything that's happening in here is actually not in alignment with the fact that your soul chose this body on this earth rather than like on an, in another dimension, on another planet or what have you. So it really,
So it doesn't, you're not tending to the needs of the person, like in the space. Like you're just not, you know, it's just not good. It's not sound coaching to me.
What is some other languaging you referenced before, like in coaching that would be considered, would be considered racist, but if someone said it, it wouldn't be a blatant form of racism, but it would be kind of like a microaggression.
Well, I think that like one of the things I was talking to a group earlier today, and this example came up, and I've actually seen this where people are explaining, you know, folks of color, black and brown, indigenous folks are explaining how like a strategy might not work for them, or a, you know, a solution that a coach is offering isn't culturally relevant to them, for example. And like coaches will sometimes say things like, well, is that a story you're telling yourself?
Ooh.
I've heard that quite often. I've heard that one a lot, actually. Is that a story you're telling yourself? Or is it a want or a need? Like these kinds of like, is that a real desire? Yeah. Or is it something you're making up? Like these kinds of things that are just like, if someone is telling you that they've had an experience the impact of an experience they have makes them feel like they have been, that it is race-based or racialized or a strategy just won't work because the community that they're going in is not valuing them because of their identity or whatever it is. And for you to say, is that a story you're telling yourself? Completely dismisses like just endless amounts of research that demonstrates that people are treated differently based on the color of their skin. And we have to give people space to be able to share their reality and help them solve the problems, like help them come up with other solutions instead of being like, well, no, just like apply the strategy or you're not like trying hard enough. Or, oh, the other one is like, did you believe it? Like sometimes around, especially we see this around money, when people are having a hard time selling or when people are like trying to, you know, they can't close clients. People are, the narrative is sometimes like, do you believe that this is worth it? Or do you believe? And it just like, and the thing is what's nuanced about all of this is that sometimes those are appropriate questions. And it's not that you can't ask those questions to everybody. It's just about like how, and like how you let your client lead. This is culturally responsive coaching. And we're actually like working on a curriculum right now to be training people in culturally responsive coaching, because we need, like, there's a lot of people who are in the role of coach who call themselves coaches who are really operating as like consultants and strategists. And so they're not, I get real, like, I try not to get defensive because it's not, because I get it. I'm not one of the people. There's a lot of people who want coaching to be like a credentialed kind of licensed thing. I don't want that to happen. But there is a science in coaching. There's a whole body of psychology around coaching psychology. And like, we know strategies that support people and that move people closer to their goals and that are really like supportive to people. And there are a lot of people who are operating as coaches. And what they're doing is just giving advice and saying, hey, do this, do that. That's not actual coaching. If you were using coaching practices, you would be more likely to be like listening to your client, encouraging your client, drawing things from your clients, and like incorporating what they have in them with your experience. So it's like this collaborative, like co-creation relationship. But what we have a lot of instead is like someone learned a method and then they become a coach and they teach that method. You know, and like that gets perpetuated a lot. It's just not, you know, but that's that, what I said before, that capitalistic, like outcome driven, profit driven way of doing business.
Mm. Yes. So much within that. So, and then within your space, you know, the space of coaching, I want to talk about the difference between, and if you think there's a difference between work in diversity, equity, and inclusion and anti-racism work. Do you think they're different or?
Yeah. So these are different words and different things, like, and they intertwine. So diversity, I'll give you the quick like rundown. So diversity is like just the amount of people with different types of identities in a room. Like, just picture that. So it could be racial diversity, age diversity, ethnicity, gender, right? Diversity on its own just means different types of people, right? Or different types of, you can have all kinds of diversity and all kinds of things. That's one thing. And before, we used to just worry about diversity. You do diversity training, you would have diversity quotas, affirmative action, right? Like, these things are about like creating ways for different people who are not white to be included in spaces or to be in spaces. Equity is about making sure that those people who are in the room are achieving outcomes at the same rates, right? So the difference between, and so if we think about it in terms of like equal versus equitable, equal is that everybody is treated the same. Equitable is that everybody is treated differently based on their need, so that they are getting the same thing. So if we have, picture a school, picture a bunch of kids in a school, the goal is to graduate. Equal means everyone gets the exact same thing with the expectation that they graduate. We know that's not what happens in high, that's not what people need. Students are different. There's diversity of students for all kinds of different reasons. They need different things to get them to that bar of graduation, right? Which is why we see the graduation rates the way that they are in this country. So equity is about creating conditions, well, for me in my work, in coaching practices, in businesses, so that people are able to achieve success at similar rates, right? Inclusion is about including everybody's needs in your plan in advance, like making sure that you have prepared the space for them to be successful. So, and that you've like thought about it and thought about what their needs are going to be, and you've really done the work to like include them. So it's not just that you're welcome to come, is that we have included you. And so your experience is going to be different. I always give the example of like, you can invite people over to dinner, be like, oh, bring your friends, everybody's welcome. And then 20 people show up and half of them can't eat anything because you haven't accounted for anybody's dietary restrictions. You just made what you wanted to make and you just expected that like everybody was going to be fine. But now you have some people just only eating salad because like, you know, like...
Come to LA, it's about 90%. 90% yeah. Are not eating or eating salad.
Right. So that's like inclusion, right? That you have thought about it so that everyone can have an equitable experience. Everybody leaves full. Now, so you can know all of the information about like the history of racism and equity, diversity, inclusion, all of these things. Now, still not necessarily rise to the level of anti-racism. Anti-racism means that you are taking very specific action to disrupt racist patterns. So that's like next level work. And that means that you're taking risks, right? That you are taking a strong, active stance in opposition of racism. Just yesterday, we had the example of Starbucks, who told their employees that they couldn't wear anything related to Black Lives Matter. So they couldn't have buttons, they couldn't like anything at all. For some people, and I'm sure that Starbucks thought that they were just, that was just going to be a good move so that they cannot be political and just like keep people happy, keep people happy or whatever, particularly racist, because like it's going to be people, it's the All Lives Matter people who are going to be upset by a Black Lives Matter pin or something like that, right? And I'm so glad that like, what happened, like it went viral, like everybody's talking about it, you know, people talking about banning Starbucks again, like all of these things, and they had to change the policy. They were forced to change the policy because of, you know, the optics, the public relations part of it. But if Starbucks was an anti-racist institution, that policy never would have happened. And they would have like in advance, they would have like made a statement that they actively support the movement for Black lives. You know what I mean? Like they would have done that knowing full well that there's going to be a whole bunch of people in the suburbs of all the places where they have little stores that are going to stop going to their cafes, and that they would have made that choice anyway. That's anti-racism work. That's part of it. That's the big difference. It involves a lot of like unpacking bias, unpacking your identity, understanding how white supremacy like infiltrates all these things and how we are perpetuating it because it's the things that we've been taught. The idea that you would turn into, that you would be an anti-racist institution requires time and very explicit action. I've been a little suspicious of like a lot of the people who are like all of a sudden like, we're an anti-racist institution. No, you're not. For like sure. You want to be, but like you're not, that doesn't happen overnight because you learned the word. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it takes time.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's the whole thing with like, that social media that's so amazing, but terrifying at the same time, that it's like Amazon puts out a statement. They're like, yeah, we're support whatever. And everyone's like, yeah, go Amazon. It's like, actually look at their actual fucking practices and the way that they operate in the world. And the way so many of these companies operate in the world is so trash. And then they put out one statement. Everyone's like, yeah, perfect. Sounds great. Like,
no, right.
It's ridiculous. There's so much that they do behind the scenes that is like, perpetuating so much chaos and destruction in so many different ways. But yeah,
yep.
I wanted to, for in the coaching space. So how does coaching right now, as you see it, how do coaches perpetuate racism in the way that they show up?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things that we need to look at. Like we need to look at, for example, how we build coaching, like curriculum, like not just like the curriculum to train coaches, but whatever our curriculum is, like looking at it to make sure that it's not inherently biased, for example, and not just that it's not inherently biased, but that is, it is explicitly inclusive, right? So that it takes into consideration in very, and then is built in a very explicit way that you are talking about how identity intersects with some of the things that you're helping people with, especially if you're in like life coaching or empowerment or, you know, any of these things, any sector really, thinking about how identity and culture intersect with your like coaching theory or pedagogy, like you should be doing that. And on also, I'll say that my position and many people's position is that you're either like anti-racist or you're perpetuating racism and you're like, you're racist, right? So there's not like an in-between like, oh, we're not racist, but we're not anti-racist. No, if you are not actively working to create inclusion and equity and to put things on the line and to create an anti-racist institution, and that you're practicing on being that, then you're just like cool with the system we have. And so you're just perpetuating racism. So that's just where I stand and where many people stand with me on that, you know, issue. So looking at curriculum, looking at contracts, looking at how we hire people, looking at how we, you know, like how we recruit coaches, like this whole, I keep talking to coaches who are like, I can't hire a coach because, or I can't hire someone because they need to go through my coaching program first. And my coaching program costs $20,000 a year. It's like, well, change it. Mm-hmm. Like just change the rule. You know what I mean? You can do that. Like, that's why you went into business. Change the rule, do a training, let's come up with a way for it to happen instead of you telling me all the ways that it can't happen. Like, mm-hmm. don't be so committed to how it can't happen. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that. I just don't understand people's commitment how hard things have to be.
Yeah. So attached to the monetary value rather than the impact.
Because it gives them the figures. Then they can say they're six figures or seven figures. Yeah. Shout out to the birds at your house too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the birds they're like are singing feeling in the background.
It. I love they really them. Are. They're making me so happy.
How do you, like, you know, if you have people who are open to the diversity and inclusion work as a coach, but you see that like they have little to no awareness about where their blind spots might be within their own business, what are those first exercises, conversations like?
Yeah, so for us, like we're actually constantly kind of screening for people's preparedness for this because for some people who are just for the first time realizing that like racism is a thing, they're not ready to work with me. Like I don't take those clients, you know, they have to do some like consciousness raising. They need to read some books, listen to some podcast episodes, maybe do some work with someone else before they're ready to like work with with me and my team on like really doing the work in an institution. Because if you don't get it as a leader, you can't be a leader in an anti-racist institution. Like you won't be able to hold the line for the work, you know, because people are going to challenge you. And if you don't have the language or the commitment to stand by it, you're going to kind of be like, oh, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't make that statement. Or, you know, maybe we don't need that Black Lives Matter sticker on the website or whatever it is. Like you'll be so nervous about every little thing. I mean, I have gotten on the phone with people, not like on the phone but on calls with people with many groups. And just the word, just me saying white people makes them like rattled. And I'm just like, you're not ready for what we're doing here. You know, like
Till I tell you about white supremacy.
Right. Like it just won't, y'all it's just gonna not going to work. So yeah. So people should do, yeah. So I encourage people to be like, you know, doing that work. People who are working with me are usually like, they have some awareness, or they're super committed, or they're like a combination of factors. But for folks I'm working with, like they're either somewhere in their journey and they're really committed to like building a business that is explicitly inclusive, and that they see, and that they kind of see themselves as like an activist, and they want their business to be an expression of those values, right? For my higher profile clients, like the bigger corporations that we're working with, our work starts with deep, just personal work. So I'm on the phone with like CEOs, you know, in some cases, multi-million dollar companies, right? And they're just asking questions like, why is this racist? Or what about this? And how do I say that? And just giving them space to just like talk without judgment, so that we can like establish trust and a foundation. Because they, to do this work with me, people need to really be able to trust me, because it gets intense. People need to know that I have their best interest in mind, but that I have their best interest in mind, but my highest interest is actually their Black and brown clients. Like that is who I serve. You know what I mean? Like these people are hiring me to help them build some things in their company, but like my commitment is to make sure that they're building an institution that is safe for people. So we start with personal work, and then we do like consciousness raising. So we talk to their teams. We talk about the history of racism in America. We talk about how that's perpetuated in business. And then we start looking at like, all right, let's pull out the curriculum. Let's pull out your contracts. Let's look at all the ways, all of the ways that some of these practices may have been institutionalized. I also ask clients to like pull any customer service inquiries or complaints, or, you know, like just feedback that is any kind of like comments around race or what, you know, or people not feeling safe. Like we're like looking at what's happening in the community. We're talking to clients, we're talking to staff. So it's a pretty comprehensive. So when I work with coaching agencies and like institutions in the personal development world, it's comprehensive.
And I want to actually just talk about that next. How do you build a business as a coach that is fully expressive of the values? But just really quickly, what about contracts could be, well, I guess racist isn't the word, but like, tell me about contracts in this sense.
Yeah. So for example, I have worked on some projects and have gotten some like, you know, because people will like, people text message me, or that people screenshot things that happen in groups and emails, and they send them to me because they want me to know like what's happening in different places, right? So I have seen, for example, things where people have been in programs, someone has said something that is like either a microaggression or racially charged, that person no longer feels safe in the community, or it's clear that like the people in the community have not been trained around issues of equity, and that person wants to leave, and it's like, well, no, you signed a contract.
Got it.
You know, mm-hmm. And so there's no space mm-hmm. to no account cause. For this like really deep, yeah, like these just non-binding, you know, like, or these binding contracts that are just like, or, you know, I'll let you out, but you can't talk about like what happened here.
Wow.
No.
My last question is around social media, because in this day and age, coaches, really anyone, has a social media platform of some sort as a way to reach and communicate with their audience, expand their audience, and spread their message. So I've seen it all the past few weeks and had my own kind of personal reckoning with like, how do I want to show up online right now? Like, what is that proportion of showing up in private and online. And right. both Krista and I have been feeling this very strongly. So what is your perspective, especially during this time when it's so important that we are speaking up and out and standing up for what we believe in and really looking at how we've been a part of the problem so that we can be a meaningful part of the solution? Like, what is your perspective on that? And how can we show up in a way that is really impactful?
Yeah. So I think that part of the answer to this is to really be in touch with your commitments. And that's why that part of the work is really so important, because not everybody is going to be online activists, right? But if your social media presence is big and your like business is built around social media and you go silent during a global crisis, right? Like both a global pandemic and also social crisis that we're experiencing at the same time, people will notice. And there's like an expectation that you show up. And I think that like, if you're committed to being a leader in your space, you should say something and you should have support to try to figure out what to say, right? Like, not that you need to hire someone to tell you what to say, but that you should be in communication with your community to talk about, this is what I want to say. Like, this is what I'm thinking. People shouldn't have to guess like where you stand on these matters. That should be baked into what you're doing already, right? So you run into the most trouble here when you're not, like when people are confused about where you stand, right? Like, if people knew where you stood, it would be easy to just keep doing what you always do, right? But if not, I think that like part of it is one, understanding that you are, because if you're a public figure, you're up for public critique, and that part that just comes part of the platform that you've built, and you have to just accept that, you know, and understand that people have the right to have the feelings that they're going to have, you know. And yes, you are a person, you know, because it hurts sometimes when people are calling you out and bringing up stuff from the past, and it hurts you personally. And you've built yourself into a brand, and so you have to like try to understand that there is a separation there, and that people, you know what I mean, like, yeah. mm-hmm. and you really need a support for that, like a therapist, a coach, like whatever your support systems are, like. But you need to be remembering that like you built this brand, and that brand is up for public critique, and that's part of it. The second thing is, I think to be honest about where you are, like, don't rush into allyship. Like, don't rush to put the, you know, I'm now an anti-racist institution and, you know, all these things, but just say, own that you've made mistakes, own that you're going to do better, own that you're concerned, like own that you're reflecting and that you don't know what to say all the time, you know, and that's just part, you know, just know that that's just part of it. And not everybody's going to love what you say, and some people are going to love it, but you, as long as you're being honest, like, you have to be able to just live with that. It's going to be messy. You know, there isn't like a perfect statement that you can make to make people feel like you're cool, like that everything's going to be cool. Like, you just need to understand that as long as you're being honest about where you are in your journey, that you can stand in that no matter what else is happening. You can't control that part of it. You know, you can only control like your side of it. But I do think that like, but this is also part of like the work, right? Because we have, I believe that people, all people who have businesses or who are leaders, should have plans in place for how to respond in an emergency or like in a social crisis. Like, we have disaster plans, right? Like, if there's a hurricane or if you live somewhere where there's like fires, you typically have a plan for how you're going to respond to that. So if you're a big public facing brand, you should have a plan for like what happens when this happens, when we're in a moment like this. So like, for example, Marie Forleo in her group, she could have had a plan for how to respond when people were talking about their identity or like who are expressing their frustration with the lack of inclusion or talking about George Floyd's death. Like, she could have had a plan for that because those things have happened before. Like, we, you know, in the world, we know that those things have happened. And so if we were looking at our businesses through this lens of inclusion and equity and anti-racism, we would prepare for how to support people when they're in that kind of pain. And then you wouldn't have what happened, like, you know, what happened there, like around not being responsive. And I know that she's trying to make amends in various ways, but it's just a really good example of how like that didn't need to happen.
Yeah. Can you explain a little bit more of what happened so people understand?
Yeah. So folks had been, there were a number of folks in her beauty school group,
on
you know,
Facebook.
We're talking about, yeah, on Facebook, who were talking about they're not feeling included because we're in this social global crisis. So everyone's talking about it everywhere. Like it's affecting every single industry. So of course it shows up in the coaching industry and people are talking about their identity and how it impacts business and bias and how they're feeling and Black Lives Matter and the protests and people like the people were shutting off comments, deleting comments. People were saying things that, you know, like all lives matter, like all of that. And they didn't. And then Marie Forleo first made a statement that like they're shutting off comments because the team doesn't work on the weekends. And so, you know, just like, and so of course people were screenshotting and I woke up Saturday morning to like messages in my inbox, like for what was going down in the group. But like that kind of thing happened before in her group. So how many times that has been my like question when I responded to, you know, my response to that, what had happened, that all of the pictures people were sending me was basically a call out to the industry saying like, how many times do we have to watch our colleagues handle this? Whether it's Danielle Laporte or like Gabby Bernstein or, you know, whoever it is, how many times do we have to watch that happen before we look at ourselves and say like, oh, I want to make sure that that never happens to me. Not just because I don't want it to happen to me, but because I don't believe that I believe that we should be doing better.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do the work in advance to make sure that everybody feels included and that I never make that kind of mistake.
Mm.
Like how many times do we have to see it happen before we start
truly.
To?
Yeah, it is kind of fascinating because even as a viewer of that situation, like I adore Marie. I think she's amazing. But to see that happen, it was interesting because it's like, I felt like, I was like, oh, I know you can't do that. You know, and our group has taught us
right.
that. Like, it is kind of like, oh, I know you can't do that. But I would say that, you know, coaches are very, and I'm not saying this about Marie, I'm not saying this about anyone that we've talked about, but my perception of coaches at that level is that they're very fragile. And so they live and die by the identity that they're perceived as. That's how they make money, is being liked, being idolized, all of these things. So when you have that situation in front of them that is challenging that is like, to them, can be, that's when they have that, you know, triggered response of like, delete, delete,
right.
delete, because it's forcing them to look at the identity that they have. And it's telling them that
right.
they might not be as good as people perceive them to be, if that makes sense.
No, that's totally true. And I think the reason that it came down, especially for Marie Forleo, because she talks about how much she appreciates like hip hop culture and mm-hmm. she dances hip hop and she has integrated that into her brand. So like to be out of touch in that kind of way, I think was just an extra, you know, it laid it on a little like extra hard, you know, like, come on, like you really should know better here.
Right.
But I think you're right. I think that people do have, you know, they have these brands and the perception of who they are and people need to like them. But I think that's why it's even more important to be in touch with, to be explicit about your values, because if you are, then you're doing that same thing that we teach people, like when we're trying to get them to pick their niche about like attracting and repelling, you're attracting and repelling people according to your values. And so like, you just won't have people show up in your group who are like, you know, white supremacists.
Mm-hmm.
If you're clear that that's not what you value, you know what I mean? That not only that you don't value it, but that's not acceptable. And that we, you know, we deal with things, not just that you don't accept white supremacy, but that you have put into practice conditions that allow you to respond to the people in your communities, because you can't disassociate like race and identity from business if you're like, when you're a person of color or brown, black, indigenous, Latinx person, that is part of what you bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, you know, on that piece with Marie, it's like, just as like a last thing, you know, Marie is incredible. The work she does is incredible. She's kind, she's smart, she's all the things. It's really like, I feel like so much of it is misconstrued by people from the outside to be negative. It's like negative calling out. She got called out. She got all these things. But it's more so like the Black community, the people of color just want to be heard and like just want to be seen and want to be recognized. And so much of it is that just like true wanting to be seen, heard, and recognized that is misconstrued as someone being bad.
Call out, yeah.
And anytime we've, not anytime, you know, because 2 years ago when people would, you know, started to say stuff to us, you know, you guys need to be more thoughtful about all the things that you're doing and saying and people you're bringing on the show, whatever. Like, I was incredibly triggered by it because it was like that wounded feminine where I was like, damn, I'm doing so fucking much. Like, I'm working a full-time job. I'm trying to do all this stuff with you guys, for you guys, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, so much of that was my shadow work over the next 2 years. And now when I received that, for the most part, not all the time, I'm so thankful that like I was given the opportunity to see that point and to see that growth opportunity. So the last point I want to make about the Marie thing is that it essentially is a positive because it really will allow her now to go on that journey, if she hasn't already, to growth, to opportunity, to being more inclusive, and it'll make her work so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so. Like, you know, I said this in the workshop that I did, like, it was really hard for me to be like, well, you know, first of all, things have shifted over the last couple of weeks, but I was like, I'm going to do this video and I'm going to write this article and, you know, people in my community will see it and that'll be it. But it was like shared, you know, like so many times. And like now, you know, Marie Forleo has like named Rachel Rogers and I, like, you know, as people have like responded.
I saw that.
So there's a lot of attention. Yeah. So there's a lot of attention now. Like, people are trying to understand more about my work. But it was hard for me to like, just a little bit, not to call out Marie Forleo, because I'm like, I like Marie
for sure.
Like, you know, like, I know she's problematic and like, you know, like I wanted.
But when you care about someone.
Yeah. And I wanted to kind of be like, her, you know, you're her friend, like, you know, yeah. In my head, you know, we all have these like friends in our head. I'm like, no, she's cool. Like, she means well. Right. And one day maybe I'll be on Marie TV, you know, like I had that kind of like idea about it. I was like, if I call Marie Forleo, she's never going to want to talk to me, you know, but right. My commitment, because I'm so clear about my commitment, I knew that like if people were sending me this these things, they trusted me to speak about why it was so jacked up. I had no reason to believe that Marie Forleo would ever see the video I did, right? Like small fish over here, like, you know what I mean? Like I just thought that at least the people in my community who trust me and who look to me for context and who want to understand why what happened was so wrong and, you know, and for me to speak on it, I was like, at least I am committed to showing up and whoever hears it, great, right? But that's what I mean. Like, when you're committed to something, you don't have to think about it.
Yeah, that's where the personal risk comes in, you know, like that commitment really makes it right. Clear and makes it so, so impactful when people are willing to take that personal risk. And really it's, if we like kind of pull back, it's or pull up, it's like for the good of all, you know, like right. There is this like,
yeah.
Because of social media, there is this call out and cancel culture, but really your willingness to do the video is like this invitation into conversation, you know, if done in that right. Way, like it to me, it doesn't seem a part of like a, it's a two-sided conversation that can be had, yeah. Which I think is important right now where so many people are not having the conversations that could be the mm-hmm. seed that begins the healing.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me and my work especially, it's really important that I am holding people accountable and educating and providing context, but also at the core, I believe that things can be better. Otherwise, there's no purpose to my work. Like if I didn't believe that I can go into some of these institutions that are like, have never looked at any of these things before and that have been called out by people, if I didn't really believe that I can go into those institutions and create change, there would be absolutely no purpose for my business to mm-hmm. exist, you know? And I'm not in the business of doing it just to make money, because for the last couple of years, I've done well, but I could have made more money like doing some other kind of work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I could have been just a regular business coach, right? Like making mm-hmm. way more money and like selling way high end ticket things. But I was like, I know that this is the work that I'm here to do and that this is the work that's transformative. So it was just like, I just got to wait eventually people will see.
Like, love that. You know. Yeah. What's your last question? What's your hope for the future?
My hope for the future is that I don't have to do this anymore because we have fixed all the problems. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, like, this is the kind of work that you hope you do to work yourself out of a job. And then you can like do, you know, help in some other way. At the end of the day, I believe that the work of coaching, the process of coaching is the most transformative, that the potential for the most transformation exists in the coaching world. Way more than education and the educational system or any other world. I think that coaching, quality coaching has some of the biggest potential for creating change, right? Just because of the nature of the work. And so because of that, I want all people to have access to high quality coaching to be, whether it's that they're starting businesses, whether they need empowerment coaching or health coaching or whatever it is. I want people to have access to it equitably so that everyone can benefit from having a coach, right? And so that means that I need to help institutions serve more people, train more coaches, be safe places for Black and Brown people to be successful so that those people can start coaching practices and make it more accessible and that it becomes part of our regular practice and that it's not countercultural anymore. So that's my hope, that we really transform the way that we work and that it then that everybody gets really in tune with the potential for impact that the industry can have. Because I don't think that I don't think that people really get that yet.
Mm. Amazing. Where can they connect with you, Trudy?
Come and hang out with me on Instagram. I'm hanging out there more these days. So just at Trudy LeBrun.
Beautiful. And then your Facebook group is?
Yeah, you can hang out in the Facebook group. The Facebook group is Business Remixed with Trudy LeBrun. It's the same name as the podcast. So yeah, come and hang out with me in either place.
Love so it. Good. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, we appreciate this was you. So having me. Much fun. Seriously, yeah. I'm super grateful. We appreciate it. And we'll keep you posted when we share.
Great. Thank you so much.
Amazing. I'll
have
see
a great
you later.
Again, Trudy.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much, Trudy. We appreciate you, TrudyLeBrun.com.
And we have some exciting things coming up. So we have a workshop with the New Paradigm Digital Series with Adriana Ayales, and it's Ancient Remedies in the Modern World. She is an herbalist and founder of Anima Mundi Herbals. And we talk about plant medicine and how we can incorporate it into our lifestyles every day. We also have our merch coming out soon, shopalmost30.com. And we have our frickin' Malibu retreat.
Cannot wait. Second week of August. This is a little slice of paradise. We had our first retreat last year, and it was one that I'll never, ever forget. If you're wanting rest, relaxation, lots of learning, growth, connection, we've got you. And the lineup for this retreat is incredible.
Yeah, we just had a human design session with Jazz, who is incredible. We have Milana Snow, Alexandra Roxo, Doc Jen Fit. We have sessions on mobility, restorative yoga. We have sound baths. We basically have everything if you love Almost 30 incorporated into the retreat.
And a really nice swag bag of sorts, yes, from the retreat that's going to be packed for you. So you can go to almost30podcast.com/retreat. Thank you all for listening. We love you and we'll see you soon.
See you soon.